Welcome to the Slipstream Media podcast show. Today we're having a chat to Ryan Gibbons after the recent Giro d'Italia, and we also find out just a little bit about him, a little bit about his journey, and what sort of numbers he's pushing in these races he's doing.
We are today with Ryan Gibbons, just come back from the Giro d'Italia. Ryan, thanks for joining us today. You are rubbing shoulders with the likes of Viviani, Caleb Ewan, the big, big named World Tour riders. When are you going to win a race?
Yeah, I ask myself that same question quite regularly. Hopefully it's coming. I feel like I'm knocking on the door and getting closer and closer. My results at the Giro weren't great, like what they have been in the past, but this year there's been a lot of progress and got a third at a World Tour race in Catalonia. So getting there, so hopefully you can kind of get that out the way pretty soon.
What is your racing schedule looking like going forward?
At the moment, I'm not too sure. I'll get confirmation about the Tour de France this weekend. But if I don't do that, probably Adriatica Arnica in Italy, end of July. Then Big Bang Tour, some of the classics, and then Vuelta España.
You don't do the Vuelta?
If I don't do the Tour, yeah.
Okay, so you're doing two Grand Tours this year?
Yeah, same as last year. It's quite big, and it's does a lot to the body, but it's better than training. So I'd rather race than train. So yeah.
In terms of stress on the body, I mean, that must take an absolute pounding on your body. In terms of training peaks, TSS scores, what does something like a Grand Tour do to you? How tired does it get?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, so now, obviously you've got like a really good base leading up to it. So, I mean, you have to train hard and condition yourself for it. I get some TSS score days of over 400. And I mean, I've got an FTP set of over 400. So to get a TSS of 400, that's really, really quite tough. Your CTL, you know, sometimes approaches 200. It's big. Back-to-back 35-hour weeks. TSS scores of 2,000 a week. I mean, I'm a little bit sick at the moment, and that's purely coming off of such hard racing for so long. You know, the body just takes such a pounding.
Ryan, so what's it like in a sprint? We watch it on TV and it's complete chaos. We see lots of teams with their lead out men. What's it like? I mean, it looks completely scary.
A lot of nerves. I think, you know, you've got to be quite fearless. And it's not only from, you know, crashing or making a mistake of your own, but, you know, a rider coming into you or even a fan leaning over the barriers too far, clipping the barriers. It's pretty hectic, you know, that last kilometer, it's pretty much tunnel vision, and I can't actually recall every second what goes on. You know, you're just in it and hope for the best, and hopefully you're in the front, because if you're not in the front, it's carnage.
Ryan, in terms of UCR points, you currently rank third on the UCR Africa Tour rankings behind Daryl Impey and Mahawi Kudus. What does that mean for you as an athlete and for your team as Dimension Data?
As an athlete, you know, your ranking kind of gives you worth, and it kind of affects your contract. It can affect other teams interest in you. The objective is to be as high as possible and accumulate as many points as possible. And then the points that you accumulate go to your team also fights for a ranking. So at the moment there's 18, 19 World Tour teams, and there's always a fight for position, and some teams are going to get relegated and some won't. So kind of having more points gives your team a higher score, and that's a high position.
And obviously you being a South African, the points go towards South Africa's ranking on the UCI Africa Tour. And South Africa being number one, we obviously qualify more spots at Olympic Games, Commonwealth Games, and the World Champs. That's also an advantage of getting as many UCR points as possible.
100%, you know, because I think in the past where South Africa have had maybe only two riders at World Champs, and sometimes not even, where other nations have upwards of eight. And, you know, it's very hard to be competitive and rival teams like that just based on numbers.
Ryan, let's speak a little bit about your journey. I mean, you're a World Tour cyclist. You're at the top level of the sport, rubbing shoulders with the likes of the world's top sprinters. Take us through your journey and the process of how you, as Ryan, got to where you are today.
So I started with mountain biking, and then kind of when I got to 17, 18, I thought there was more opportunity on road. I was very fortunate. So from the word go, I was always well looked after domestically. My first, you know, real team in South Africa was Eurocar with Nick White, George Corbett, and Mark van der Merwe. They really did look after me. Progressed from there in 2016 to the Dimension Data Continental team. I struggled in the beginning. I mean, as most South Africans do, it's hard. Just the level of racing is so much higher. But on top of that, it's you're away from friends, you're away from family for extended periods of time. And that really, you know, after 1 week, it's fine. After a month, it's fine. But after a few months, it gets quite hard. And it's what a lot of other Europeans don't have to worry about. You know, they do a bike race and they go back home.
Yeah.
We do a bike race and then you're in a team house. Coping with that and battling and overcoming that is often a bigger obstacle than what people realize, aside just from the level of cycling. So that year, you know, I struggled initially, but then the latter part of the year was really successful. I got a stagiaire ride, so a guest ride with the World Tour team. And I was also very fortunate to thrive in those races. I got a few good results. And then they signed me. From 2017, I've been pro with Dimension Data.
South Africa has managed to register two continental teams this year. What does that mean for the sport of cycling locally? And what advice can you give to riders trying to make it through the system and become a World Tour rider?
I think it is great, like you said, that South Africa do have, you know, new continental teams getting registered. It creates healthy competition. It also gives riders opportunity, gives them exposure to doing high level races, to racing outside of just Africa. It's really important to try and race abroad. And I know a lot of people say that, and there's this common misconception of, okay, I'll just go to Belgium or Holland and do some criteriums. 100%, that does, it is competitive and it does lift your level. You know, that only gets you so far. You also have to fight for points, almost get a status. You know, once you have value, then you're attracted to other teams. And other teams around the world, professional teams, you know, the races locally are really good and it's healthy competition. And, you know, it means a lot to the local teams as well as the rider themselves. But winning the 94.7, you know, as great as that is, a team, a professional team in Europe, there's no value to that because it's not a UCI race. There's no UCI points up for grabs. So it might be amazing, but it actually doesn't really give you value. So doing UCI races where you can start accumulating points, that's quite important and definitely stepping stone in the right direction.
What are kind of like the numbers that you're pushing? I mean, in terms of max watts and average numbers on an average stage of the Giro?
Every year it's just getting higher and higher and higher. This year, for the first time, I kicked 1,800 watts at 72 kilograms, and I was quite proud of that. And everyone's just doing the same. So some peaks, I mean, I think my peak 5 seconds is about 1,650. A peak minutes is 880. Regularly, I do probably 430 watts for 20 minutes just to kind of hang on the bunch in the Giro. A lot of stages, you know, you'd average 300 watts for 5 to 7 hours. You know, you get to some days, like the flat stages where you cruise along at 160 watts and then it's the last 10Ks, which is hard. But in general, you know, some of the days are pretty big.
Would you consider yourself more a tour rider or you prefer the classics?
In my mind, I would say I'm definitely more of a classics rider, not a one-day specialist. But I have noticed that in tours, I generally do tend to get better and better. I don't know if, you know, if everyone else says the quality of the other riders is just going down and I'm kind of staying the same, or if I do get better. But it generally, you know, towards the end of the race, I am thriving and getting better results then. But in my mind, I'd probably, you know, if I was to define myself, I'd say classics.
You're getting a lot of top 10s, but what's the difference between getting a top 10 and actually crossing the line first?
A big difference to a lot of other riders, and kind of someone like Pascal Ackermann, perfect example. We turned professional at the same time, we're the same age. 2017, I actually was a lot more successful than him. I think thus far, I haven't really had a dedicated lead out. And it's not, you know, talking about like a train like Viviani has with 5 or 6 riders, just kind of one rider who's there to drop you off in the last kilometer. Not kind of someone to drop you off in the last 10 kilometers. So in my mind, I'm hoping that's the difference. And that when that does come, hopefully wins will come. And then with that will come confidence and self-belief. But yeah, in my mind, I'm telling myself that because maybe I'm just not good enough. But yeah, keep trying. And hopefully in the future, I'll have some support and kind of prove that I am or aren't.
What's it like being in a team with the likes of someone like Mark Cavendish, Mark Renshaw? Have you learned a lot from them?
Mark Cavendish, when I was a youngster, and I think most riders riding in South Africa at the moment aspired to be him, or he influenced their careers or their perception of cycling very much so. I would say he's also played a big part in me wanting to be a bike rider, not only racing the same era as him, but to race in the same team. It's really special. You know, obviously his career has changed. Him and Mark Renshaw and guys like Bernie Ecclestone are probably towards the end of their career, but I'm definitely grateful that I got to learn from them, put on a race number alongside those guys. At the end of my career, I can say, you know, I not only raced with or against Mark Cavendish, but, you know, alongside him as a teammate. And that's quite special and unique.
Can you beat Mark Cavendish in a sprint?
100%, 100%. If he was around, I wouldn't say that, but 100%, yes.
When you're in the off-season, I heard you're not shy to crack open a few beers with the boys. Is that true?
I think it's important to have balance. So, I mean, when you're in season, it's very strenuous and it's strict and you know, it's quite a hard life, and you know, you've got to watch everything you do and everything you eat, everything that goes in your body. So I do somewhat overindulge when the occasion presents itself.
What's your Strapita time?
For a bottle of wine, it's 7 seconds. For a normal beer, it's probably about 2.8, 2.84. But who's counting?
Okay. Are you taken? Do you have a girlfriend?
So who's asking? Are you asking? I have a girlfriend then.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode. We hope you enjoyed the content that we put out. In next week's episode, we're catching up with ProTouch team principal, Tony Harding. He'll be giving us a rundown of the team's second part of the racing season and what their schedule looks like.